Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Anne Lynch, good afternoon. You there with me, Anne?
I am. It's so great to talk to you.
Okay. And the feedback is very high. Cats normally have 9 lives. How many lives has your dog got?
Well, he's for sure at least gone through 2 now.
And his latest escapade, he's a beautiful, beautiful Pomeranian. And he's called Rally, he spells his name differently, but that's his own business. What happened?
Yes.
Take us back, because we want to find the people that rescued Rally. Did he jump off the cliff or did he fall off the cliff?
Well, we didn't actually see it, so we are pretty sure that he fell off the cliff because he's a little smarter than that, we like to think, that he would jump. But his ball was actually up on the top of the cliff, too, so he wouldn't have jumped after that because he carries that everywhere he goes.
So you were out walking. We're talking about the cliffs in Howth, which in places at the Ben of Howth, for example, can reach over 500 feet. But anyway, you're out walking and you have them under supervision. And then Rally, what happened, Rally?
So, well, we are not 100% sure. We got around the bend and he was a little bit ahead of us. And we started looking for him. We have 2 dogs, so our border collie was there.
Okay.
Her name's Sugar, and Rally had was gone. And there was a couple there who said, well, we asked them if they had seen a little white dog, and they said, yes, he fell over the cliff. So we, obviously started to panic and had a fright. So we laid down on our bellies to try and find, see if we could see him. We couldn't see him. We were yelling and hoping he would, poke out, and he didn't. So I after a couple of minutes, trying to call for him, I ran up to get the phone number for the Garda, and I called the Garda, and while my partner was, staying there and laying on the cliff trying to get him to move so that we could see him. And so we got back, I ran back to the cliff, and, we still hadn't seen anything or.
You haven't heard it. Did you hear barking or yelping or anything? No sound.
Nothing. It was just silent except for us yelling. So
you thought it was, bye bye, Rally, bye bye.
Oh, absolutely. We were sure. Well, we weren't sure, but we were hopeful still at that time. My partner looked up and she saw 4 kayakers coming from the north.
Okay.
And they were quite a ways out. And we just started jumping and yelling. And at first they just waved back, thinking we were just, waving to them to say good morning. And and we finally just, flagged them down and asked them to come in. And we yelled, hey, do you see a little dog on the beach there? And so they came up, got closer, and one of the gentlemen said, yes, I see him. And we said, is he moving? And he said, no, at first. And then he said, oh, no, wait, he is. So we knew he was alive at that moment. So
are you shouting, Rally, Rally? Yes.
Absolutely, yes. Trying to get him, look up. It was, we couldn't really see straight down the cliff. There was a little bit of a jut out there. So, we were hoping he would kind of wander out, but he was not moving. The kayaker jumped off his kayak and picked him up and carried him back to his kayak and put him between his legs and started paddling away.
Fantastic.
And he said, meet us at the Sutton Dinghy Club. And so we said, okay, we will. So we jumped back in. We ran back up the hill and jumped in our car and went to the Dinghy Club. And just as we were getting to the club, we could see the kayakers kayaking up to the club.
Now, when just to go back, paddle back. When these four, as you say, the four kayakers, they were all male. It was Sunday morning, March the 9th last. Out and out. We're trying to find them, obviously, to tell them how Rally is. But when they picked up Rally, and fair play to him, one of them got out of his kayak and waded in and got the dog. Was there, had you any indication that Rally was still alive?
Oh, yeah. Well, he had said he was alive, and he said, and he also yelled out, and he said, he's got blood on him. He's going to need a vet. So that made us feel a little bit better, at least that he was alive.
But like,
and Joe, just one thing. I think there may have been two men and two women. I don't remember that part clearly.
Okay.
So just to make sure.
Yeah. They said go to Sutton Sailing Club.
Yeah, the Sutton Dinghy Club.
Okay, and dinghies are different, obviously, to say, but anyway, there is a certain dinghy club. And by the way, how far do you think Rally fell? Rally dropped?
We think it was about 15 metres at that spot.
Okay. But would he have hit rocks in between or outcrops?
We think he would have hit an outcrop of on the wall, on the cliff.
So you now dash the Sutton Dinghy Club.
Yeah.
And the four musketeers, three musketeers plus an extra one, the four Good Samaritans, the four rescuers, the four kayakers of the apocalypse, they come in to Sutton Dinghy Club. And what state was Rally in?
He was awake, but obviously in shock. He was very quiet and wasn't moving. But he was, awake and alert and looking at us.
And was he shaking?
No, he was just very still.
Okay. Do you think, you love him, obviously, and your other dog.
Very much, yes.
But did he show any contrition in his gorgeous little puppy eyes?
Did he say, I'm sorry, mammy? I think that he was more relieved to see us than anything. It was some relief, I think, yeah.
Okay, so what happened next? So did you you didn't get the names of the kayakers because you wanted to get Rally to a vet.
Right. Because in the meantime, we had searched, we had gotten out on a WhatsApp notice board of our neighborhood and asked, does anyone know where a vet might be open on a Sunday, morning? And, we got some immediate responses. So we took him over to the vet. But just as we were, as he handed me off, as they handed Rally off to me, I ran to the car and he followed up and he said, "Hey, what's his name?" And I told him his name's Rally, and we drove off. So that's all we would have talked about other than me saying thank you originally.
Any idea what age these rescuers were?
Oh, I'd say probably, I don't know, I want to be careful, but, maybe low 40s.
Okay, so that might help us find them. Now, you took Rally to the vet. You found a vet, and what was the diagnosis?
So originally it was some serious bruising, but we couldn't get an x-ray until the next day. So the next morning we got the x-ray, and it was obviously serious bruising, some swelling on his liver and his on his ribs, and a torn, ruptured ankle, which he had to have corrected via surgery. So he's got some little pins in there now, but he's doing well and recovering.
And we've tweeted on @ShowLiveline and @RTE Liveline or X, or Rebbe Frazier. It's on Twitter. It's two beautiful photographs. One is of Rally in a pram.
Oh, yes. Well, so he's a very active little Rally, and he's a very active little dog, and he wanted to go on all of our regular morning walks. We walk every morning. And so we my sister-in-law sent us a buggy for him. It's a special dog buggy. So we would, drive him around every morning with our border collie, so that he didn't mess out.
So he's in his pram, but now the second photograph.
Yeah.
Which again we tweeted.
Okay.
When was that taken?
So is that the one with the
leg?
With the cast on.
Yes.
Yeah, that would have been the day of the surgery, right after the surgery.
Oh, he had surgery.
Oh yeah, he did. He had to have two pins placed into his ankle.
And was he a good patient?
He was. I think we went to a wonderful vet. I don't know if I can mention the name of it.
Of course you can.
It's the Dublin Bay Vet. Veterinary right. clinic, and they were wonderful. They were just they saved him, and they're the kindest and best vets around. So I just love them.
Now, Anne, can I ask you a question? When Raleigh decided to take off, literally over the cliff,
yes.
Why did you ring? Why did you? And they are brilliant, and they will never dismiss a call. But why did you? What did you think you could gain by ringing the Gardaí?
So I wasn't sure. I thought that maybe they could call someone on a boat to come get him.
Okay.
Or, you know, I don't know. I've heard helicopters going around. And I'll tell you, while we were running back up the hill, I was already starting to hear a helicopter. So I'm not sure if they had that was for him or for something else. But we did call the Gardaí back to let him know that, you know, we got him.
Ah, that was nice.
So they can not worry, yeah.
That was nice, because there's a very famous story in here in RTE archive, and we play it every now and again. It's from the great Mike Murphy, still with us, thankfully, and will be for many a long year. And it's the story of a dog, a true story, and we'll try and find a clip, that jumped out of a plane out above Howth, above the Irish Sea. And it's an incredible story of how he jumped out of the plane. Now, I don't think the outcome was as positive as Raleigh, but it's another remarkable story. I just wonder, if the canoeist had not been there, you couldn't see that Raleigh was at the bottom of the cliff. Sure, you couldn't. You couldn't see him.
No, I couldn't. No, I couldn't.
Okay. So you didn't know whether he was dead or alive or, God forbid, bobbing around the sea.
Right.
Okay. So if you had not seen the kayakers and waved to them frantically, and thankfully they came in and one of them was good enough to get out of the kayak and wade in and lift Raddy and then kayak back to Sutton Dinghy Club. If you had not seen the kayakers, what would you have done?
Well, I think that we would have hoped to get some help from the Garda or the,
the lifeboat.
What is it? RNLI or anyone?
Okay.
I don't. Just anyone. We didn't know. Or we'd have had to start figuring out how to get down, but there wouldn't have been.
Oh, don't ever. Don't try and get down.
Well, I know.
So there is a brilliant.
There is where you can't go down.
But
yeah.
There is a brilliant Coast Guard cliff rescue service out in many parts of the country, but one of them is in Howth. All volunteers are absolutely brilliant. I don't know. I know we've rescued cattle, but I don't know if they'd assess the risk, wouldn't they? They'd say is it risky enough? Is it safe enough for one of our humans to go down with all our equipment or whatever, and joists and hoists and hydraulic this and that? Is it safe enough to go down and rescue Raddy? They would have had to make that judgment.
Yeah.
But Sadie had said to you, "Now it's too risky."
I'm so glad they didn't.
And the tide is coming in.
Yeah.
Is Raddy, is he anyway appreciative?
I think we think he is. He's awful clingy, and he he's very good to us now, and he wouldn't leave us like he did again. I'm sure not.
Well, not out of jumping out after jumping out, but it's a great story. So we're looking for the four kayakers. What do you want to say to them?
We just want to thank them and we apologize for, not getting their names or numbers.
Okay.
But I would just let him know that Raleigh lived through it all and you saved his life. So thank you.
Well done. Well done. And is he back on his feet?
Oh, yeah, he is. He's starting to run now. Sometimes he's a bit of a tripod and, you know, kind of bouncing around. But he's going to have a full recovery.
Yeah. And let's hope he's developed a fear of heights.
I hope so. We've not been back to the cliff with them since that day.
Okay. And how's it? What was your other dog called?
Her name's Sugar.
Sugar.
She's a Border Collie, yeah.
Sugar, okay. Okay. And I'm sure Sugar was distressed as well.
She was.
Seen her best buddy. You've seen Roddy go over the cliff.
Yep.
Okay, we'll try and find those kayakers, Anne.
Joe, thank you so much.
That's a great
much.
Service.
It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise, likewise. That's Anne Lynch. Joe at RT.ie.
0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. An issue it's raised continuously, but let's try and do this before we get the annual call saying my son is our daughter's just been sent home from sitting their geography exam because they went in with their earrings in, or they went in with their hair blue, or their hair grey, or without their school uniform, and the school has a strict school uniform policy. And what I'm saying is there any way, given the pressure that are on young people, especially these days, is there any way schools will say, listen, an amnesty, don't be worried about your school uniform. Don't be worried about if you want to wear an earring or a nose ring or a piercing or whatever. The main thing is to get yourself in here and do the exam. Garrod, I know you were you're anti-school uniforms. What do you think of the idea and lots of schools have strict school uniforms and haircuts and various other regulations. What do you think of those schools declaring an amnesty for the next 4 weeks?
I think that'd be great. So, yeah, I would be very much in favour of that. I think it's an awful shame that, and it's sad, I think, that in Ireland we make our children from 4 years of age or even younger, mm-hmm. to be 18, to be in uniforms nearly every day of their childhood. It just seems to be kind of against what childhood is about, in my view, really. And as a teacher, I suppose, I see the mm-hmm. The implementation of those policies, and I don't agree with them.
And you've done some research.
I've been reading around and
good
reading
man.
About it, trying yeah. to try, trying to try, as a teacher. Obviously, it's something I see every day, and it's just a bugbear for me really to see that the punishment and the enforcement there is involved. In enforcing the school uniforms, you know, enforcing the rules around it, and you know, the harassment and the of students and the kind of the stress that it causes them, the mm-hmm. fear of being caught in that. And yeah, like there's I was looking across the EU,
okay,
and Ireland is one of two countries or three countries, all small islands that where uniforms are the norm. There's 75 million. Students in the EU of school going age,
yeah.
and less than 1 million of them are in countries where
wow.
where uniforms are the norm. So any argument that you know that it's going in made in favour of uniforms, I think the rest of Europe, you know, those arguments don't hold up. You know, the
so
arguments,
only you're probably better. Only one million out of 75 million. Students who would be eligible, so to speak, of that age group.
Yeah.
Only 1 million of them are obligated to wear a school uniform. So that's what, between 1% and 2%?
It's about 2%, yeah, are living in countries where uniforms are the norm. And they're Ireland and Malta and Cyprus as well.
Ah.
Now, what do those three countries have in common? They're islands, for a start. They're small communities. But also Ireland and Malta have the colonial British history, and of course the uniforms were invented in England.
Okay.
And also the strong control by the church of the education system. So those two elements, I think, particularly in Ireland and Malta, are the factors that play into why uniforms are seen as so much norm in Ireland. You know, but of course there's lots of schools in Ireland that don't have uniforms
yeah, yeah.
now. But
as I say, every year around the next few weeks, we start getting calls.
Yeah.
And they're frantic. They're frantic. And then the school is backed into a corner. The parent and the student is backed into a corner. And it can be really distressing. So my point is, can we, is there any way we can cut it off at the pass and say...
Schools, Joe, are tend to be operating in little bubbles, you know. And a lot of the time, they're not really relating to the outside world, you know. And they have their rules and they have their way of doing things and they don't like change. But I'd love to see schools and boards of management taken on to do a trial like you're suggesting there. To do a trial, you know, a decent extended trial of 6 months or a year of no uniforms or even, you know, choice around the uniforms or do it with 1 year group. For example, 6 years now, I think it's ridiculous that they're you know, coming into school, getting dressed in these school uniforms. And I know talking to some of my 6 year students who actually feel daunted by the idea of getting dressed in the morning because they've been so institutionalized since they were 4 years of age, think that they can't dress themselves. And of course, then that's reinforced by teachers and systems that are punishing them if they veer away from it all, if they've got the wrong colour socks on or the wrong colour laces or a bit of colour in their hair. And that really influences the culture and the atmosphere in schools.
And it's a great scene, isn't it, from the first episode of Derry Girls where Nicola Coughlan, they all decide they're going to break the school uniform rule and express their individuality, as they said.
Yes.
But it turns out that Nicola is the only one brave enough to put on a denim jacket. And she says, I want to say it's a great line, she said, I can't express my individuality on my own. Jane, I know you're pro-school uniform, but what do you think? What do you think the idea of an amnesty around the Leaving Cert and the Junior Cert, for that matter?
Well, okay, so that's a kind of a slight tangent because an amnesty would only be needed because there hasn't been, in my view anyway, in some schools, enough of a buy-in by the pupils. So your last caller was talking about choice around the uniform. And yes, I absolutely believe there should be a democratic process and a healthy debate in the senior years about what kind of uniform should be worn. The pluses of it are massive. Like, if we even just start with the simplest one, which is cost. So it costs a fortune, you know, to dress anything from once you get to 4 or 5 right through to leaving school. And then when you look at the pressure, and I do have some experience of schools in the EU as well, and there isn't that same kind of pressure to be absolutely on trend that I see here and maybe in the UK as well. You know, but for instance, in France, you know, people just rock up in their jeans and their sweatshirt and that's it. Nobody's judging anybody on the brand of jeans or the brand of sweatshirt. So I don't think we can just say, look, they're not wearing uniforms in the EU. But on the price thing, you know, you have your one uniform and there is no sort of judgment about wearing a handed down secondhand uniform. And many schools do their sort of sales end of summer and coming up to the start of the new school year. And there are even, I was just hearing, asking around amongst colleagues this morning, you know, there are pop-up shops even start at that time of year where you can buy secondhand uniforms. So it's saving an awful lot of money. And if there is any child in a school that can't afford even a secondhand uniform, that should be covered. I really think that...
Just finish your point, Jane, and let Garo back in.
Yeah, so I really don't think that that should be an issue. But when you come back to me, I want to talk about bullying, which I have seen as a head of department all around what kids are wearing in school.
Garo, sorry, you wanted to reply there.
Yeah, I just want to address the point about consulting and consulting with students and asking about what type of uniform. I think any full, proper consultation with students should have realistically on the table the option of no uniform. Quite often students are asked, you know, would you like this type of uniform or that type of uniform, this? And the option of no uniform isn't on the table. So I think a true consultation would include that. Then in relation to the point around the cost of uniforms, you know, saving money, quite the opposite. I mean, every September we hear the reports from Barnardo's and the Irish League of Credit Unions and Vince DePaul about how many families are going into debt to pay for the uniforms. A quarter of families in Ireland are going into debt around that time of year to pay for uniforms. Speaking to students in the school where I teach, which is a fairly typical voluntary school, the uniforms are the most expensive things they're wearing. And, you know, it's way better. Like, if you spend, say, 400 euros on uniforms, if you're to spend it in the likes of Penny's, where most of them want to shop anyhow, they get tons of clothes. So that argument
about... Yeah, but you don't get tons of uniforms in Penny's for that price. But you're avoiding my point, which was that uniforms can be handed down, uniforms can be bought secondhand, and there is no judgment for that. But when you offer the option of voting for no uniform, you're immediately putting back the question of bullying and of cost. So you're adding in by offering that option.
We could argue all these points all day. My proposal is that schools do trials of no uniforms and then see, do these things bear out? Do all these things that, all these problems that they see that uniforms solve, do they bear out? Or does the sky fall in? I think that, you know, where the evidence is there from the schools that don't have uniforms, that things work fine. They actually, you know, not having all these kids dressed the same brings kind of a light and a levity to the classroom and to the corridor. And I think it's worth trying. You know, we should try it. We assume that uniforms bring all these positives, but let's try carry out proper trials. Like, I would say 6 months or more.
Okay, but Jane, just to go back to Jane.
Yeah.
What about Garrod's point that if you want to wear a uniform, wear a uniform. If you don't want to wear a uniform, don't wear a uniform. Is that allowed? Should that be allowed?
Well, not really, in my view. Because whilst you can come up with, you know, the senior pupils say, okay, we want to wear, you know, tracksuit bottoms and a sweatshirt. We don't want to be wearing a school shirt that buttons up or an itchy tartan kilt, you know, which my own girls had to wear right through school. I mean, I've taught in schools on, you know, both cases. So with uniforms and without. And for my money, your trial would already cause difficulties because you're immediately, sadly, and I don't know why it's so much the case, but you're sadly going to introduce, just the modern world and social media, you're going to introduce judgmentalism of one child to another, which shouldn't be there.
See, we're judging them all the time anyhow. As teachers, what we end up doing as teachers is we end up judging our students and, you know, bringing fear into the situation.
Well, that's fear not the way being, I thought.
Well, that's what happens. If you have rules in the school and the teachers are expected to implement them and to police them, and therefore we end up in conflict with students. And teachers nowadays don't want to be in conflict with students unnecessarily.
That's my point about getting buy-in from the pupils, because you won't have any objection if the senior years have had a sensible debate and debated how much tradition do we want to reintroduce how much do you not want?
But
you've had that buy-in, you don't have an objection.
Are you saying that debate for the 5th and 6th years, the decision should be by a simple majority?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Like a jury, they will persuade each other. Something will make sense to most of them.
I think if students were allowed to wear the clothes, their ordinary clothes, for a period of 6 months,
I take that point, Garrod. Now we'll come back with another question to ask you. Jennifer, say there, Jane, if you can. Jennifer, good afternoon. Yeah. First of all, the idea of the next 4 weeks, would second level schools go easy on uniforms and hair and nose piercings, and because there's enough stress on young people? And Garrod is saying that it's not just this time of year, Joe, it's all year the uniforms inculcate stress. What do you think, first of all, Jennifer, of the idea of an amnesty for the next 4 weeks?
No, I think the next 4 weeks, in particular children who are in exam years, they have enough to be thinking about without what to wear every day. I'd be happy enough for them to continue to wear their uniform. Having said that, I do think our current uniforms aren't as practical as they could be. Mm. I think they were designed originally maybe 56 years ago, maybe more. The same fabrics are still in use. They're not comfortable for children to wear day in, day out.
Well, just on your point there, that's the question you're prompting me to ask Garrod. Garrod, you were saying Not only did the British give us the fields of Athenry, the famine, TB and everything else we blamed them on, you're saying they gave us uniforms.
That's right, yeah. The English invented the school uniform.
Right. To what end? Class, pardon the pun.
Class, originally. But in the 1500s, the 1500s, 1600s, it was actually the poorest kids were given the uniforms at that time because they couldn't afford clothes. So that's where it came from. And then, obviously, the posh schools. When I was in school in Lucan in the 1960s and 70s, it was the posh schools had the uniforms, and then the girls' schools tended to have uniforms as well because the nuns, of course, felt the need to control what young women were wearing. And it was when I went to school in secondary school, CBS in Lucan, there was no uniform at the time, and it was introduced shortly before corporal punishment was banned in the 1980s. And there is a connection. You mightn't want to go into it now, but the whole fear in schools about losing control meant that uniforms came back into vogue. They were kind of dying out a bit, and schools became much stricter on them. And then there was the snobbery associated with, for example, you know, identifying with the posh schools. You know, the middle class schools wanted to look more posh. You know, so that was all at play,
well,
really.
There's that famous image, and I'm not with the school uniform, but there's that famous image of David Cameron and Boris Johnson and the whole gang in the Bullington Club. Do you remember that? They're all dressed in tails. And then you have a special classier uniforms for so-called richer schools or whatever they call them. Sandy Kovic. Sandy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, good, good. Uniforms, first of all, an amnesty. I see by your first line you agree. But you want to see uniforms abolished in totality. Why?
I'm sitting here in the school pickup line watching one of my kids in an Educate Together school which don't have uniforms.
Okay.
And he's jumping about and he's happy and he's comfortable and there has never been any issue with bullying or any indication that what he is wearing affects his education. I've no concept of why, especially in exam years and sitting exams, what that has to do with their learning.
And the point that Jane makes about competitiveness and comparing and contrasting and what you're wearing and what I'm wearing and my Nikes are more up to date than your Gucci t-shirt or whatever.
We've never, ever, and my kids have been, my eldest is going into secondary school in September and I have never once come across that. And because they're in the type of school they're in, they're taught to be individual, they're taught to be inclusive, they're taught to be kind.
So they're also taught to be tolerant, and you will see it change when they go into secondary.
What do you mean, Jane? Go ahead.
Well, I don't think that the kind of the social pressures and, I mean, bullying may be actually quite a harsh word, although I have seen specifically that, but the kind of ostracization or just looking down on a kid for wearing the wrong stuff doesn't generally start until secondary school. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Can I come in on the bullying thing, please?
We're moving on to a different topic, but I just want to, I'll hold you all over the break. Sandy, if you get to second level and the only option locally is a uniform school, what would you do?
That's exactly what we've been faced with this year. Exactly what we've been faced with. We moved down to Wexford, and where we are now, we really only had two schools that would align with our ethos, our religion, co-ed schools, etc. Yeah. So she will be starting a uniform school in September, and it is definitely a worry for me, knowing the type of kid she is. She's very sensory. She's a lot of sensory preferences, and I'm concerned how that's going to affect her ability to sit in a classroom.
Okay, stay with us. Going to talk to Sean and yourselves again after the break. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number. As a retired principal that's worked both in no uniform and pro-uniform scenarios, your contribution, please, Sean.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing? And wishing you the very best of luck in the near future. But Joe, I started off, in first of all, in my own schools in a rural area in South Kerry, I went to no uniform primary and a no uniform vocational school. I was quite opposed to school uniforms as a result, but I started my teaching career in Edenmore on the north side of Dublin in a disadvantaged area, and it totally changed my perspective on uniforms. I found that they were very much a leveller, particularly for children who aren't in higher socioeconomic brackets. And I then went on subsequently to teach in both rural and urban schools, which had uniforms and didn't have uniforms. And I would have to say that, you know, I think it's much easier on children to have a and on parents to have a situation, number one, where I suppose they're wearing items of clothing 5 days a week, which means that you're not into constant changing. And you know, a lot of schools now have introduced tracksuits for PE days, and that works quite well. But I think that, you know, the argument, I certainly believe, and I've seen it in action in schools, that, you know, I suppose the one item now in lots of schools which isn't subject to uniform rules are shoes. And you can see the competition between branded runners and very expensive runners amongst kids. And I think it's a disadvantage, you know, and I really don't. And I would have to say to a couple of the parents that were on there, the idea that children who wear uniforms aren't happy, aren't nurtured, aren't teaching, and aren't learning in an inclusive environment, I don't think is a fair portrayal of those schools. I think that, you know, inclusiveness and individuality is about the culture of the school, and it's not exclusive to schools who don't have a uniform policy. I think it can be equally as inclusive in schools that do. And I know in our own school, in the school I retired from, if there were to be a vote in the morning, the vast majority of parents would opt to continue with a uniform policy. And that's not conservatism, it's practicality.
Okay, but Sean, to come back to the, I take those points, but come back to the original, is there, and maybe there was in your school, is there a relaxation of the uniform policy for our exam classes?
Well, I was in primary, Joe, so obviously that didn't come into play. I would have no issue with that, and I know that, you know, I think the time around exams is very stressful for, particularly for leaving certain students. I have no issue with that.
Wrong word, but with a lowercase p, what was the punishment if you didn't come in your school uniform?
I think, you know, the vast majority of schools try to do their best. The vast majority of parents, in my experience, bought in at primary level and had no issue with the policy because they had an outlay of the formal uniform and the tracksuit at the beginning of the year. And very often, as some of the contributors have said there, and in my own case, in our own house, those uniforms got passed on from one child to the next. And, you know, many of the older uniforms were very robust and lasted a very long time. We had tracksuits in our house which lasted 10 to 15 years and were almost as good the
Sandy is still there, Sean, beside you and on the screen at least. Sandy, Sean, are you specifically directing your point to Sandy that she chose Educate Together School because of no uniform policy?
She might well have done. The other thing that has happened, Joe, and I find it very interesting, I taught in rural schools in Southwest Kerry, virtually all of whom had no uniforms at the time I taught there in the 1990s. They've all subsequently switched to uniforms and for the very reasons that I've said. And, you know, I think far from it being a situation where people are moving away from uniforms, I think it's going in the opposite direction.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah, I find that very sad.
Okay.
I think it stops children being able to express themselves, even through hair colour or piercings or any of those things. Like that, if that goes against the policy, then it's just a no-go for them.
And do Educate Together today, and I know you can't speak for everyone, but do they allow piercings and nose rings and various other
They would be primary. The one we're in is primary, so I don't think that's kind of an issue. But, I mean, anything goes. You know, the boys can wear nail varnish and it's just...
Why not?
It's a non-issue.
Yeah. Jean is in Drogheda. joe@rte.ie/51551. Jean.
Hey. Hi, Joe.
Good. Pro-uniform throughout the year, including exam time.
Well, I think the uniforms are very, very important. And the reason being that, you know, the lady that's talking to you, but, you know, you need money to be able to kit out your children in the best of
well, the
gear.
Cost of and that a uniform for me for next year is costing me more than my child's clothes would for the year when they've not been in a uniform.
I brought up four daughters, and I think if I'd have had to provide them with the latest fashions when they went to school, it would have cost an absolute fortune.
Mm. I'm looking at €700 for next year for my daughter, and that's getting a kilt and some trousers.
That's the uniform.
And the school jacket. Yeah, and the shoes that have to be completely black. Like, there's no way I would have spent that much money. And my kids are in secondhand clothes a lot of the time now.
Okay. And Jean, what do you think? And again, we're talking about the next 6 weeks or so. What should happen, Leaving Cert or Junior Cert candidates who come into school without the school uniform?
Well, you see, I think that if you're going to a certain school, right?
Yeah, but should they be the point is, but should they be punished? They shouldn't.
Well, I don't think they should be punished, but I don't think that they should really be able to sit their exams.
Well, that means it should be punished. I can't think of a stronger punishment than that.
Well, okay, yeah, that's the punishment then.
Wow.
But, you know, they know the... But that's the rules of the school. You know, if the school's rules are uniform, okay, and if they're taking their exams in the school, now, if they weren't taking them in the school, that's a different matter. If they're actually in the school, then I think they should wear the uniform.
Most candidates do take the leaving or the junior in their school. Dave Larkin is in Blackrock. Dave, in Blackrock in Dublin, I presume, at this stage. There's about seven of them in the country. Dave, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. You're anti-uniform.
Certainly for the next 6 weeks. I suppose I'm coming from from kind of three different perspectives as a post-primary teacher for the last 15, 16 years. A researcher as well, and for the last 6 years I've supervised a Leaving Cert. And I suppose one of the concerns about this idea of punishment or this idea of reprimanding students for not wearing uniforms during the Leaving and Junior exams, I suppose they're not thinking of the practicality issues. Now, I actually supervise exams for the last 4 years up in Clontarf. Mm-hmm. Now, in the middle of June 14th, 15th, 16th, and those girls are sitting history, geography, business, economics. It is absolutely sweltering. The school I'm in, it's mandatory that the girls have to wear their uniform. And, you know, it's completely not fair. I mean, you know, visibly as a supervisor, you can see that they're uncomfortable. They're drinking gallons of water, which in turn affects they're up and using the bathroom, etc. They're sweating, they're wiping their foreheads, they're under pressure anyway because of the exams. So it's just from a practical point of view, it doesn't really make sense. Now, from a teaching point of view, look, I completely understand where people are coming from in terms of uniforms, part of identity, part of the community, the importance of one school, absolutely. I've worked in a number of contexts in Ireland and the UK, and I've worked in non-uniform and uniform schools. And certainly in my own context, there is a move to a more traditional uniform, moving away from the shirt tie blazer to a more, not hoodie type, but I suppose kind of a polo shirt and uniforms for PE. I say to girls in my own school, and it drives me bananas, is why girls still have to wear in some schools a shirt and tie. I mean, there is nothing more traditional than a male dress than a shirt and tie. And I always ask the girls every year, well, whenever have you ever worn a shirt and tie outside of school? Now, there will always be one or two who are quirky and will express their individuality like that, no different than lads wearing nail varnishes, etc. That's fine. But for the vast majority, it's completely bonkers that we're expecting, teenagers to wear a suit-like dress coming into their primary and secondary education. And from a researcher point of view, I've done research on uniform policies and some of the stuff is absolutely as stringent and as archaic. And needless to say, a lot of these schools are from, Catholic ethos schools when we're talking about education.
Okay, I take that point. But give me a jump-out stringent rule you've come across.
Probably the most stringent one I've seen is an all-girls school. Girls must only wear, and the word must was in it, must wear only one stud earring, must not have their nails polished, and only 5th and 6th year girls are allowed modest, very modest makeup. And actually, to add to that, in the same school, if a female student forgot their tie, which again I re-emphasise the male dress code, they have to rent one from the office for €1. And this is in a school that's in a lower in a socioeconomically marginalised area. I don't like using term laws, is you know.
So if you forget your tie,
your
necktie in a girls' school, you go down to the office and they'll give you a tie, but you either have to pay them €1 on the spot or bring in €1 the next day.
Or the next day, that's in the uniform policy, what was even more striking in another school was that those who were of the Islamic faith must wear their hijab in a particular way and in only one of two colours. Now, again, a Catholic ethos school, I don't think a Catholic ethos has any right to tell a Muslim child how to wear their hijab. Yeah. But anyway, that's beside the point. But again, it's just...
I'm baffled by that. What was it? You're allowed to wear one stud, one earring, is
one
that it?
One stud in the ear, yeah. Any piercings on the lip, any piercings on the nose must be removed. And again, the word must, as if it's this draconian year head or principle that would be coming around checking. Now, obviously, you'd see nose rings. They're quite prominent, obviously, when you're talking to someone. But yeah, they must be removed in this school. So, again, I can see the benefits, but I think the stringent approach of...
rules and regulations mean punishment. They have to. There has to be some mean enforcement.
Yeah.
Stay there, Dave, for a sec. Emma, your contribution, please.
Joe, my pet hate is formal school uniforms. I understand the whole thing about them having to wear a uniform, and as a parent it's very handy that they are for 5 days wearing, you know, the same thing, and then it's easier. But I just think the formal uniforms are unnecessary in this day and age. Who wears occasionally, but on a day-to-day basis, who wears a suit to work or a shirt and tie?
Please wait.
Okay. There's another line there, so but when you say if you go more informal, that means no uniform.
Well, no, if they have, like, for example, ours have a school tracksuit, and when it comes to May, they have a supposedly a summer uniform, so they wear a little, you know, tracksuit type shorts and a polo top in May. Why can't they just wear their tracksuit all year long? Because it's more comfortable, as what the other lady said, they're running around, jumping, particularly younger kids. But even when they get to those teenage years, then at least you're not dealing with the fashion. I mean, you're going to obviously, they probably have their runners that they're competing with each other, but like at least they're wearing a tracksuit, they're comfortable, and they don't need to be in suits and shirts and blazers and ties. Who goes to work like that?
Dave's point about the school uniform he was referring to, where the young women had to wear a short and tie and everything that goes with it, during the leaving cert, the sweltering leaving cert, where you should be in a light T-shirt, if you wish, and a tracksuit bottom or whatever, as comfortable as possible. Olive Doherty to finish the segment. Olive, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks, Olive. You say strict.
Well, I have it from both ends. So I have 5 girls and they went to school in an Educate Together primary school.
Okay.
So they didn't have a uniform. Then they went on to secondary school, 3 of them are in there, and they do have a uniform. So when they were younger, it was fine up to about 4 class, easy enough to dress them. Once they got into 4 class, 5th and 6th, then they wanted brand labels, they wanted this, they wanted this. So it ended up more expensive. I think the uniform is a great idea as a parent of 5. I think it's very smart. Everybody's dressed the same. They have a regular uniform, then they have a PE uniform. And they just know to wear it. And as regards to the exams, like they're in the uniform all year round. It's another 2 weeks. I just think it's less stress if they wear their uniform. It's one less thing to be.
No, I take the point. But my opening question was: should there be a penalty if you decide not to wear the uniform during the exam? That's what I'm trying to cut off at the pass. Where we get these calls every year, people saying he's just been sent home, he forgot his jacket, he forgot his tie, he forgot to take out his earring or whatever. And this is during exam time.
Well, I'm not sure about exams, but I think the rest of the year definitely, because it's like you won't go out and drive a car without insurance. So if that's the rule. So do you know, I think that there should be penalties, and I think as parents we should bring our kids up. You know, if they're part of the school, that's the school policy, that's the school rules, and go with it, like. You know.
Okay. Good to meet you, Margaret. Olive, Sean, Emma, Dave, Jane, Garrod, and all the other callers. Joe@rt.ie. 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Somebody remarking there that I wasn't very gracious to Sean O'Hargan. Sean's a great, the principal school teacher, when he wished me well in my retirement. I'm not retiring until June the 27th. And I have been getting cards and messages from people. Some people are looking for the Liveline card I do send out. Now, there's two things I ask you to do. If you want a Liveline card that I paint every now and again, you just email your address. I need your address to joe@rt.ie. And the second proviso is when you get the card, you're not to put it in a box, or you're to pin it to your fridge, because the Liveline card has the Liveline phone number, has the Liveline email address, has the Liveline text number, has the Liveline WhatsApp number, has the Liveline postal address. And the idea is the Liveline number is not going to change. The postal address is not going to change. The 51551 is not going to change. The only thing that's going to change is presenter. So if you want the card, and you're very welcome, Joe, just email your address to joe@rt.ie. I'll send you out a card, but you must undertake, and I will be doing random checks, you must undertake to display the card prominently in your workplace long after June the 27th next, which is good, 4 or 5 weeks away. Josephine Cunningham. And thanks, Sean O'Hargan. You're very good, and you've always been a great contributor to Liveline over the years. Josephine Cunningham. Josephine, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. What happened? I've seen this. I don't know what we can do about it, but I think it's getting worse, Josephine.
Absolutely, Joe. Absolutely. I'm not often verbal about things, but I feel very strongly about this particular issue.
And it is?
Well, it is about drivers, private drivers using the bus lanes, but I have a particular reason.
Okay.
It was something that would always annoy me, I suppose. You're driving along and you're going pretty fast, and then cars overtake you on the bus lane, and you think, oh my God. We've all had to wait for buses at some point in our lives. Most of us drive now. But in particular, this is different. This is about a short journey that I took there recently.
Okay.
I happened to be at an appointment, that's neither here nor there, but I did happen to be at an appointment at Beaumont Hospital, just an ordinary, you know, yearly check-up. And I was coming back home. I live in Sowood. I was coming back home, and I was approaching the big junction, kind of going into Dublin Airport. But between that large crossroads, to the next roundabout,
mm-hmm.
there's a bus lane. There's a bus lane all the way along, Joe.
Yeah, of course,
and It's a bus lane where the guard there wouldn't even have a space to be, have a guard at the checkpoint. So if I didn't move over, I probably would have ended up in it, but I went into the ordinary lane, and then a car passed me out, another car passed me out, and I was counting them in, there was at least 12 cars, and they filled that bus lane, private cars, there's no buses, and I thought, oh my God. And again, I'd probably have let it go and think nothing of it, but about 2 minutes later, an ambulance came behind, and it was distressing. Now,
it was an ambulance on a call.
On a call, blue light.
Okay.
Now, the reason I feel so strongly, Joe, is I have been that soldier, and I've been in the back of an ambulance 32 to 40 times with a very severe allergy. And you know, when you're in the back of an ambulance, you know when they're moving, and you're praying for your life inside that ambulance, and you know when they're stopped. It was so hard to watch them trying to manoeuvre between all of us. And they did eventually get to the bus lane, but they were stuck in that bus lane because the cars weren't moving. And to sit and watch that and think, I've been in that ambulance, I've been fighting for my life in that ambulance, and they couldn't get through. And when they got to the roundabout where they turned for Beaumont Hospital, it was distressing to see the speed that they went at.
And where and did, suppose, but is it, so far as you can see, Josephine, is it that the cars, once they went into the bus lane, were trapped in the bus lane? Could they get out? Could they move to allow the ambulance?
No, it was chock-a-block. It was, you know, it was one or two cars or three cars, but the whole lane, Joe, was full of private cars. And you'd noticed it in the past, but I know, and that's why I rang. I noticed it now all the time. The amount of people that use the bus lane, it's wrong. And it could cost somebody their life, you know. And as I said, I've been that soldier. So that was why I rang into you today. If one or two people or three drivers hear it and think, well, no, we'll wait that 10 minutes of the ambulance. And they, equally, they could have been going to a horrific accident either, like, either way.
Of course, of course. But what can you do? Does someone jump out of a car and run up and down and say to the...
No, I suppose, nothing I can do really, except ring Lifeline and somebody might hear it and it might cause a conversation.
Might do it. Yeah.
Somebody else might hear it and somebody might ring you tomorrow and say, I've had that experience. And it could become a point that people will say, I mean, it could be those people, I have nothing personally against those people, but if somebody that drives in a bus lane hears me or you or maybe another caller tomorrow, they might just think, I never thought of it that way. And I probably wouldn't be ringing in if I hadn't been a patient in an ambulance as many times as I had been. So
and you say, and for this, you've had allergies for how long?
Well, it started in 2011 and it ended, and I and nearly ended me. I ended up on life support in 2015 it was an allergy to mold spores, and it was eventually found out took 5 or 6 years.
An allergy to what again, Josephine?
Mold spores.
Okay.
The medical term.
Which are dangerous.
And that's just maybe it's like, this is like a sort of a double-barrel story, because that's also part of it. I discovered it myself in the end, Joe, because I was so conscious and I was so conscious trying to save my own life. I found evidence in my bedroom, and it was I was diagnosed immediately then with aspergillosis. But the actual spores is known as aspergillus. It's something naturally occurring in the ground, but when people have allergies to it, it's quite dangerous. It is life threatening for sure. Yeah, but that was just my experience.
But Josephine, if you don't mind, what is the treatment?
Well, the treatment is to do as I always do now, and I suppose people that are out there that have suffering with asthma and have young children suffering with asthma, it mimics asthma very much. And I think I was probably, I won't say misdiagnosed, because I'd be forever indebted to the medical staff and the paramedics that saved my life several times, I have to say. It mimics asthma, so it's very, very hard to find out. And the treatment, Joe, is open your windows, open your doors. And the major one for probably half the country is do not dry your clothes inside in the house. That's what caused mine. That would be the biggest.
Do not dry your clothes inside your house.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's documented by RTE actually quite a long time ago. When my husband he walks away, like, and he was home and he called me in reading an article that was on the news, and he said, what is this? And it was aspergillus. I said, I've no idea. Subsequently, mine turned out to be that.
Little did you know.
But it had a clothes horse on the article, and it was two professors saying the dangers of drying clothes inside in the house on radiators, clothes horses, and no ventilation. The condensation is critical. It goes to the coldest parts of your house, and it affects everybody. It can, not everybody, but it can. And I was susceptible, I think, you know.
Okay, Josephine, I wish you well. I wish you well.
Yes, I'm fine now, Joe. Thanks
very much. And as you say, hopefully your warning will...
One person heard it, as I said, who knows that day, like, a call like this could save somebody's life.
The 5 minutes.
The extra 5 minutes to be a bit late for their dinner or whatever, going home. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks.
That's it.